Hello, and welcome back to the finale of this season of Layover Podcast. And let me tell you, Ben, starting to get concerned that we might not win this one.
Well, I would say it's looking about as bad for us as it could possibly be looking, given that the season is over and we have not won.
Yes.
I would say that that is sort of the worst possible situation for us to be in.
Well, we need to get into litigation. We need to field a lawsuit about how this season was stolen from us.
Yes, well.
Yes. Well, this is what we do at the end of every season. The audience doesn't see this part, but
right.
We're extremely litigious.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the politicized courts are never in our favor.
Exactly.
They're corrupted by Adam Chase.
Well, congratulations to Adam Chase on winning this season. I think a well-earned victory, indeed.
He snaked really good.
I mean, the fact of the matter is, like, you look at his run, and it's just like, you know, we threw a lot of stuff in front of him, and he just managed to tank all of it.
Yeah.
And I, frankly, on my run, was not able to tank so many challenges, really any of the challenges.
Well, I think ultimately this was a season that, in how it played out, it was won and lost in the challenges
in the end.
It is interesting, and I don't even know that that's completely what we intended when we designed it.
No.
But I think that, yeah, like, I think in most games, being good at the challenges will help you, and being bad at them will hurt you. But ultimately, success or failure will tend to be determined by other factors. I think in this game, it was the case that, like, if you never lost a challenge, you couldn't lose. Like, the only way for you to crash was to lose a challenge or to eventually, as we saw, run out of time or, you know, decide to crash your own snake. But, you know.
Or theoretically be forced to crash your own snake.
Well, be forced, but the only way you'd be forced to crash your own snake is if you were too afraid of certain challenges, right?
Yeah, which we didn't see a whole lot of that actually in how it played out, but I think in theory, that is a way that
yes.
It could have gone.
Yes. Yeah, but it turned out that if you just sort of strong-armed your way through the challenges, you could not really be stopped.
Yeah, certainly was tricky.
Ultimately, I think it would have been more interesting had we had, like, a ton more time to do this and, like, runs really could go for much longer and we saw much more natural crashing. Because then I do think it would have been a factor of, like, you've got to, you know, clear challenges and whatever, but you also then have to have made a snake that has the, you know, potential to be the longest one.
Yeah. Like, I think in my dream of dreams, the ideal geography for this game would be roughly the same size, but with a higher density of trains.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think what we saw was that quite a lot ended up being dictated by, like, train schedules and frequency and speed. Whereas I think it would have been potentially more interesting if there was, like, more flexibility in what you could feasibly do. I honestly don't know what country you could, maybe like the Netherlands actually would be good.
I think Switzerland.
Switzerland, although Switzerland is not that much more dense. Certainly frequencies are a lot better, but like the train network density is not that much different. And there are some big choke points in the Swiss network.
It's true.
Aren't there like 10 times as many train stations in Switzerland?
Well, there's a lot more train stations, but there's not that many more train lines, I believe.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
I was looking at the map the other day, but Switzerland would be a good country for it.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it'd be like orders of magnitude better. But yeah, the Netherlands would be an interesting one.
Well, I'm skeptical. I don't know that we'll play this game again.
No.
That is true.
It was a bit of an experiment.
At least without some rules tweaks. But yeah, let's walk through it. Your stick was longer, Ben.
It was indeed. I got a shot at redemption.
I was so ready.
I was pleased about this because my first run was not great.
Yeah.
So I was excited to have a shot to redeem myself. And, you know, as we sort of make pretty clear, this is a great place to be starting a run.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I think we probably now all agree that this is the best spot to start, right?
Probably.
Yes,
yeah.
I think so.
Because I think at one point, like earlier in the season, we thought that Ixon was really OP and it was certainly good. Although I would argue that it looks a lot better than it actually was. Whereas Dong Daegu had multiple very strong options in a very strong kind of region of the map.
Yeah. The thing with Ixon is that, like, I mean, and we sort of reveal this when you do your run, but like most of the options all choke point in Osong anyway. So it's kind of hard. But with Dongdaegu, yeah, it's true. There's like genuinely, you know, three or four ways I could have gone that all would have been fine.
And this was pretty concerning to Adam and I, because I think what we both recognized was that like Adam's very good run was more or less like what made that possible was him getting near Dongdaegu. Obviously, like his exact starting point was tricky, but once he got out of that starting point, the fact that Adam was in that general area and had the access to the geography around there was good. And of course, you were right there. You were right in the best geography. And if you think about, you know, at this point, the name of the game is to beat Adam's run. And Adam's run timed out.
Yeah.
And he wasted all that time waiting to get out of that, you know, constraining point that he started.
Yeah, in Seo Jongju.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, that didn't get him much distance at all, you know, getting from there to essentially Dongdaegu. So it's like you gained like what, like 4 hours almost?
Yeah, something like that. I would say Ben probably gained.
Yeah. Yeah. I think probably about 4 hours. I mean, the thing is, like, it's good that it worked out this way, because I think that if Adam had timed out and had a really sort of compact run, it would have been like a big production problem. Because at that point, it's like, well, we would have had to run another run, but the chance of it being able to beat that would be like much lower.
Well, there also could have been a really awkward thing where like 8 hours in, we could have been like, well, it's now no longer possible for you to beat my run in the next 10 hours. So like, we just call it or something, which would have sucked.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Now, it's nice to have like a defined moment of loss rather than an abstract kind of not going to work anymore. But I say this, you know, to sort of set up the idea of why Ab and I chose the rather risk-averse opening moves that we did.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's actually not too dissimilar in at least ethos to like Ben and I's choice at the start of Adam's run, where we decided to put down the battle challenge in the way that just dissuaded Adam rather than him running into it. It's like, both that decision and Adonai's early moves here were sort of defined by fear of the potential of the run.
And you guys did what I think you should have done. And in fact, it was what I anticipated that you did. You know, I say it a bunch of times. And in fact, the only reason you guys got me is because you then ended up taking a kind of risky move in the end.
What?
Coming back to follow
in that we
me.
Followed him. Yeah.
Oh, well, I would characterize that as a risk-averse move.
I would argue that in the end, it was worse for us.
Yeah.
I would also argue that, like, it did rely on us not only getting a curse, but a curse that would successfully force him off the train, which is far from a guarantee. Like,
yeah.
I would argue it was, I think in the moment it felt more risk-averse, but I think in retrospect it maybe was riskier than we may have anticipated.
Potentially, but like would have been super easy of us. We could have achieved essentially the same outcome by just having gone to Seoul and then gone towards like Donghae and just put down a bunch of roadblocks and stuff.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I think this was sort of the risk averse move because we were worried that you would not take the most intuitive route, but then kind of go into some weird, you know, back lines sort of in that in-between area of the Northeast that we never ended up really seeing much.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there's like a lot of back and forth in these opening minutes. My assumption the entire time was you guys went onto the high-speed line and you were going to wait on the high-speed line until you see what I do, because I had so many options that I assumed that the best thing for you guys would just be pure maneuverability and that like you weren't going to try and get me early. Because I was really debating waiting for 3 or so trains to pass and then going on the high speed line, right? And had I ultimately done that and you guys had come back,
could have been a big problem for us.
It would have been a big problem. I would have gotten on the high, because you guys hadn't been able to put down a block. I would have been able to just go on the high speed line. And ultimately, I decided not to do that because I had the tracker, and I was like, I'm sure you guys are on the high-speed line, and I've got the tracker on me, so you guys are going to see that I go on the high-speed line.
Yeah.
And then you're going to get me.
Well, kind of a classic jet lag moment of we make the right conclusion based on the wrong assumptions.
Mm-hmm.
Which feels like it happens more often than the right conclusion for the right reasons. But
yeah,
whatever.
Yes.
It's an interesting strategy you guys have. It's certainly an interesting strategy you guys have. I mean, no one could have predicted that you guys got screwed on draws as badly as you did. So I think that, like, ultimately, it was not as risky as it ended up seeming over the course of the episode.
Yeah. Anyway, so we go to, honestly, I forget the name of where we first went to, Adam. Do you remember?
We go to Dejian.
Dejian.
We go to Dejian, of course. Lovely Dejian. Actually, Dejian, unironically, did seem very nice.
I think, by the way, I've learned that part of how we've been pronouncing everything wrong is that it's like Dejian. I think it's not Eon.
Dejian. Yeah, the E-O
it's
is Dejian.
That's what I
not
learned.
E-O.
Mm.
Dejian.
Dejian.
I think it's probably.
I can't relearn this now.
Well, you know, we're all growing.
I apologize to South Korea. We go to that place, and what happens?
Oh, I mean, you're basically waiting me out. You're waiting to see if I do anything.
Yeah.
And ultimately, you guys consider doing the shrimp crackers roadblock and then going towards me. But there is not time to do that successfully.
Yeah, we consider, I guess our train gets delayed, so we consider trying to quickly do the shrimp cracker challenge, but ultimately we didn't really have enough time, especially because it was very much the case in South Korea that the delays were, let's say, abstract.
Yeah. Yeah.
It would be like, this train is about 4 minutes delayed, and it would maybe be 2 minutes mm-hmm. delayed, and it would maybe be 7 minutes delayed. It was never very precise, so it was hard to bank on a delay very much.
Yeah. But yeah, the train is delayed, and we decide to try to do it during that delay. Because I think that there was a whole thing with timings, right? Where Ben's train, we didn't want to put anything down before Ben's train to us would have left, but once our train got delayed, we might have had time to put it down after his train would have left, so he would have hit it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But then, yeah, couldn't find chopsticks, which was crazy, right? I'd never been to a convenience store. They didn't have chopsticks. They didn't have chopsticks at that one at the train station, which was nuts.
Yeah. They seem to be, like, not as equipped at the train stations, because a lot of the train station ones also didn't have, like, microwaves and stuff, which
yeah.
classic convenience stores did. I think we've said this before, but it was a bit of a letdown that the South Korean convenience stores were just not Japanese level.
No, and I mean, it's not fair to compare, you know, those two countries. I mean, they're a lot better than American convenience stores, but yes, they were definitely weaker than Japanese convenience stores, I would have to agree.
Yeah. And I know they're distinctly different countries and all that, but I just assumed that, you know, they're right next to each other, so they'd be pretty similar, especially because it's literally the same chains. Well, not all, but like you go to a 7-Eleven and it's completely different in South Korea than Japan.
It's true. But in fairness, 7-Eleven is in America and ours are horrible.
That's true.
Except that we have ICEs.
That is true. You can't beat that.
Did they have ICEs there?
I doubt it.
I didn't really look, I guess. I don't think they really did.
I don't think so.
I feel like a non-American having an icy would go into cardiac arrest on just like the sugar.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the thing where people are like, if one of the pilgrims ate a Dorito, they would die.
Yes. Yeah.
But I contest this. A pilgrim would love a Dorito.
Mm. No, I think that's true as well. Well, Maeve and I were recently talking about this. We were being like, what is the food that you think that, like, you know, a pilgrim or whatever, like, would have their mind blown by, but they would also, like, love it.
Yeah.
Nerds gummy clusters.
Nerds gummy clusters are so good.
I think that'd be too much for them. I think that would freak them out.
I think we should do a Nebula original where it'd be deeply unethical, but that's all right if it's good content. But we go and we hike into the Amazon and we find an uncontacted tribe and we'd give them Doritos and Crunchwrap Supremes and Nerds gummy clusters. And we get their review.
Have you seen that YouTube channel that, like, people from, like, rural, I think, Afghanistan, and they're just like, here's boba. And
no,
it's really fun.
Anyway, my answer was a marshmallow.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Mm.
That's a good one.
I was like, the texture of a because I think, like, weird versions of marshmallows existed a long time ago, but, like, an actual, like, modern marshmallow, I think that would blow their minds. Like, just texture-wise,
yeah,
it would be crazy.
Yeah.
But I think they would like it because it's still a mild, like, I don't think that they would, you know what I mean? Like,
it wouldn't freak them out.
I don't think it would overwhelm them, but I think they would love it.
I would say grocery store chocolate chip muffin.
I don't agree with that.
I think that would blow their mind.
I think this is a boring answer, but because like they had bread. What time period are we talking about?
Pilgrims. We're saying the pilgrims.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Go get them like the best French baguette because it's something that they know.
Mm.
But I would bet that like the best bread you could get in France today.
Maybe like focaccia. I wonder like if you gave them like some really good focaccia.
Yeah.
With like some roasted garlic on it. I bet they would love that.
Now I want focaccia.
No, yeah, because that wouldn't scare them.
Living in Colorado is sort of like living like a pilgrim because the bread is so bad. If you had to experience the bagels I have to experience every day, you'd cry.
Ben had to experience it for a period. He lived in Colorado.
Did you cry, Ben?
It sucked. You know you don't have to live there, right, Sam? You could, like, live somewhere else.
Well, yeah, but the problem is where the bagels are good, the mountains are bad. And this is a deeply problematic...
Is that true everywhere? Are there any exceptions to this rule? Does Switzerland have good bagels?
Oh, absolutely not.
Germany has good bagels.
No. What? Really?
Yeah.
They're not popular.
I mean, bagels are like a Polish invention.
Really? I've never been to anywhere in Europe where they're at least popular. Like, I remember when I was in France, I was looking for any bagel. Because, like, what I have for breakfast, we're deeply off track. We'll round back in a second. But, like, I was looking for just any bagel. Because my breakfast every morning is a bagel. And it was basically like flatbread. It was at the grocery store. It was like flatbread, but like squishy flatbread shaped in the shape of a bagel. It was not even vaguely like a bagel. Because, you know, a bagel, you boil a bagel. You don't make it like other bread, right? Right? You boil a bagel.
Bagels, there is a part of their preparation that is boiled. That's correct, yes. They're boiled and...
They're boiled and then baked.
Yeah. So you can't just like put bread in a bagel shape and put it in the oven. But that's kind of what they seem to do in... some of these places that go through the motions of making a bagel, but don't actually.
Whoa. Sorry, guys. I'm learning something interesting on the bagel Wikipedia page. Bagels in the United States have increased in size over time. In 1915, they averaged around 2 ounces. And by 2003, the average bagel sold on a Manhattan coffee cart weighs 6 ounces. So bagels are now 3 times bigger than they used to be. Isn't that interesting?
I have never experienced a bagel where I thought this bagel was too big.
It's happened to me before, but mostly with bagel sandwiches.
Really? Wow.
I actually am a huge believer in doing a half bagel with toppings on it.
Mm. Gets the ratio better.
Yeah, well, it's like, I find that when I do like a classic, you know, cream cheese, lox, capers, red onion, etc. bagel situation with a full bagel sandwich, I often find that it really slips out unless I really keep like a tight seal on it with the thing. And also, I think that the ratio can be off and like I don't get to experience the texture of the lox as much as I might otherwise like. I much prefer to do an open face bagel with cream cheese, lox, red onion, caper, et cetera, sure, on both sides. And then I can eat it in a much more manageable way. I think get more of the texture of the lox and I don't have the issue of everything sliding around. So I'm a big believer in that, I will say.
Yeah. But yes, I would challenge the audience to submit your suggestion of the place with the combo, important combo of best mountain to bagel quality ratio.
I think it's Poland. I think it has to be Poland.
Poland doesn't have mountains.
Southern Poland does.
It might have little mountains.
Does Poland not have mountains? Because like Germany has mountains and it's like near Poland.
Germany barely has mountains.
It kind of has mountains.
Do you understand? It's not just has mountains. It has to be good mountains. Not every mountain is created equal.
Well, we're finding it's a balance.
I'm seeing that Poland definitely has some good mountains.
But they don't have big mountains.
The Carpathian Mountains?
No, Poland definitely has bagels. Bagels are Polish.
Poland has mountains. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it's got to be southern Poland, like Krakow area.
Krakow is nice. I've been to Krakow, but I'm not a big believer.
Right.
Oh, wait, what about this? What about Los Angeles? I've heard
there's been much discussion
that Los Angeles has really upped their bagel game in the last few years, and they do have mountains.
LA's mountains are bad.
I've heard that, but they don't have the water that make the bagels good.
That is true.
The water make the bagel good, it coming from the Adirondacks.
Here's the thing. Look. Okay, we need to finish this conversation. And I might have said this anecdote on the podcast before. Okay.
You have. I know what you're about to say.
The water thing with the bagels at Whole Foods?
Yep.
Okay, I'll skip that anecdote then.
Well, maybe you haven't said it on the podcast. I know that you've said it to me, but maybe you haven't said it on the podcast. It's possible you haven't. I'm not sure.
Okay, I will give this anecdote. It's an important anecdote. But sometimes the bagels that I get are just the Whole Foods bagels, like the Whole Foods brand bagels.
Which is crazy to do that in New York City. I'll say that you've ever done that in New York. That's nuts, but whatever.
Well, okay, to be clear, the only times I've done it in New York City is sometimes when I get to the city for work, I do the Whole Foods like delivery thing to arrive right when I arrive. Because I want to have a bagel right there ready to go for the next morning. And I don't want to go outside. Going outside is scary. So that's the one scenario. So I will say, I know they're better bagels. However, the bagels at the New York Whole Foods are better. And it's the exact same ingredients. Like, it's the exact same recipe, clearly. So I think the water thing is actually true. If people don't know, the theory is that the water in New York makes their bagels better.
Have you considered that it could be freshness? Bagels are potentially a more popular item at New York Whole Foods. So because there's greater demand, there's greater turnover, and you might be getting a fresher bagel.
I have considered this. However, you can tell how fresh they are just based on the sale-by date.
Okay.
And look, I will eat it, you know, a day or two after the sale-by date too. So I've had stale versions of these, and they're still way better. And it's the taste. It's not just the freshness. It's the actual taste of the bagel.
Well, it's DeWater. It's DeWater coming from the Adirondacks.
I think it genuinely is DeWater. I'm going to New York next week, so maybe I'll pack a bag just to check some water.
Well, it's good that we've spent this long working this out, I think.
Yeah. What's the show about again?
Do people like this? My understanding is people like it when we just sort of riff on whatever. But maybe that's, you know, just an echo chamber effect.
I mean, they've already seen the episode of Jet Lag the Game. They know what happened.
That's true. That's true. How did we possibly get on this subject?
I don't know.
I'm really trying to think. It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
so we go to Daejeon.
We get on the train.
And then we go back. I will say that, like, in retrospect, this was an arguably kind of crazy move for us. Like, I don't know that this actually made sense for us to do. I mean, it worked out that Ben, like, because imagine Ben didn't get on the train, which there was a very real chance he didn't. Because I would argue that us being on the same train as him was, like, not even that good of a move to start with. But then, like, there was a decent chance he didn't get on the train, in which case this was definitely a bad move.
Well, only assuming that in the time that we were on the train towards Dongdaegu, he got on a train back towards where we came from.
Daejeon, yeah.
Which I did almost do.
Yeah. You did almost do that.
For what's worth.
Which you did almost do. I think that we did not give that due consideration.
Yeah.
Because I think what we saw throughout the season was that, like, we progressively each understood more and more the value of kind of skipping trains.
Yeah.
And particularly for exactly this thing where it makes it harder to know what the other team is doing. So I'm not surprised watching this that Ben, you know, really took that strategy to heart and all that. I think our thinking at the moment, and we do say this on camera, I think, was that, like, considering your run was strong and maxed out the time, we sort of assumed, potentially incorrectly actually, but we assumed that Ben would also assume that he would just have to really start moving early to have a good shot of beating that.
Right.
I think we didn't necessarily consider that you went at 29.9 miles per hour and that actually your average speed throughout that run was actually not that high. But that is kind of what led to it. But I sort of agree that, like, it worked out, but probably it was not a perfect move. But I don't really know what would have been a better move.
No.
Because, like, we had to do something.
Well, I think that you could argue that we should have just waited in Daejeon and gotten a block down. And we should have been like, look, if he goes up to Pohang, we'll meet him around on the other end.
Yeah.
You know, like, because ultimately, as we saw, we couldn't get anything in front of him until Yongsan area anyway. Right. So, like.
Right.
And it had to be said, and I still don't know if you guys did this math, but once I was going up the Pohang route, I had no choice but to go to Yongsan because any other route that didn't go to Yongsan would have been too slow.
Mm.
I didn't have time to go down the low speed lines.
Yeah, I don't think we realized that.
And in fact, it was like pretty marginal. It was like I just barely would not have had time to do that. And I needed to go to Yongsan.
Yeah.
So you could have guarantee blocked me in Yongsan by going the other way.
Yeah. I think this is like the classic scenario of, particularly at the ends of these games where it's like longest run wins or like longest hiding time wins and all that. you know, there's like often a temptation to go for the earlier but riskier catch, basically, or like the earlier but riskier move.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we sort of assume that like in a lot of games, it's like the progress you make in sort of your defensive capability is useful at all moments. But in this game, it's like, all we need to do is stop Ben before he gets that winning run.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter where we stop him, because like we don't really evaluate this game on how close you got to the winning run. It's either you got the winning run or you don't.
Right. Well, there is a second place, and Ben does get second place.
True, but like, I don't know. We never really do a big thing of it.
In this game, we were not particularly focused on second place.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's like there's a temptation to go for that earlier catch potential, even though, particularly with how it actually played out, I agree that like it might have actually been a smarter move to stay put and then circle around and challenge him, you know, in Yongsan or on the line between Donghae and Yongsan. But alas.
Well, I'm anticipating that there will be some rules questions about the whole hiding in the bathrooms thing, because in most games, this is not permitted, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like in hide and seek, you can't hide in a bathroom. And in tag, in fact, you can't hide in a bathroom if you are a runner, right? And that's because in these games, it is the role of that person. If it's somebody's job to go and find you and catch you, you're not allowed to like go hide in a bathroom, because then that means that somebody else needs to be checking all the bathrooms for you. And we don't want to be doing that. But in this case, it's a different situation where we are just trying to hide from you, but you don't necessarily need to be looking for us at all, right? That's not necessarily part of your role. So in this case, there's no rule against it.
Yeah.
Well, likewise, I think it would be legit in tag for, I don't know why you would do this, but if you were the chaser, I think you could hide in the bathroom.
The chasers could hide in the bathroom for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it works. It works. You surprise me.
Ben, here's my gripe of the episode. I pop out of the bathroom right in front of you on this train. You should be surprised. You should be like, what
the
fuck?
He is surprised. I feel like he seems surprised.
I don't know.
I was pretty surprised. I think that's about as surprised as I ever look on this show.
I know.
No, I think he does look pretty surprised, actually.
Adam would have freaked.
Well, his eyeballs would have popped out of his head like a cartoon wolf.
Yeah.
Well, sure. But that's very easy to make me do.
But I was quite surprised. I was quite surprised. Well, the thing is, when stuff like this happens to you in Jet Lag the Game, in your mind, you're immediately trying to recalibrate, where you're like, wait, was I wrong about everything? Like, is the whole situation completely different than I thought it was? What is actually going on? And I could not figure out what was actually going on. This is also a weird thing where it's like, in any of these other games, if you see your opponents, you're done. That's it. You know, that's the end. And this is a weird one where it's like, you see your opponents, but it's like, well, they can't do anything to me here. So what's going to happen next? And obviously, I mean, we've already established pretty clearly that, like, the only real tool that a team in your position would have is to do the curse thing. And so I was like, surely they're going to do the curse thing. But you don't.
Yes.
So I remain quite confused, and I couldn't figure out exactly what your plan was. But I think that, like, my assumption at the time was that, like, the curse you have must be really effective in a particular place. And so you were waiting for the right moment to play it.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, it didn't really matter if you let me get a little progress in order to play the curse at an opportune moment, which I think if you had a curse that would have been better later, I do think it would have been worth waiting.
Yeah, it would have been a reasonable. Yeah. I mean, I will say that, like, and I mean, we make it very clear in the episode, the statistical unlikelihood that we wouldn't have a curse, right? But like, this whole plan obviously was very much predicated on us having a curse. And I think that when we came up with the plan, we just assumed we would get one at either Dongdaegu or Seo Gyeongju. Like, pretty much, we were just like, yeah, we'll have two card pulls. We haven't gotten a curse yet. Like, it feels like we should get, you know, it was honestly probably bad statistics brain from us. Like, the sort of bias towards, like, forgetting that each card pull is an independent probability, right? It's like, we only had two pulls. In two pulls, the odds that you get one are not that high. Mm-hmm. It's a good chance, but... Well, and in fairness, as the deck gets used up, there's not that many cards in the deck. And so, like, you know, with every card that gets pulled that isn't a curse, the concentration of curses increases. But no, it was like, I think we were very just like, well, we'll get a curse. Of course we will. And then, as you see, not so much. And I will say, for what it's worth, like, you know, we make a big deal out of this whole 2% thing, which I do think is a fair point. But I will note that, like, at the point at which we made this decision, we had already drawn, I think, four of our cards. So, like, we already knew that those cards weren't curses. So if you look at the probability since we adopted the plan, I think the probability is actually closer to, like, that there was, like, a 12% chance that we wouldn't get a curse once the plan was established, which is still low, but is higher than two.
I felt like this was a peak Team Sam luck episode between
Indeed.
The stick draw and then these probabilities.
Well, but you had some good luck this season, though, Sam.
Well, just this episode.
I think the narrative that Team Sam always has bad luck, I think that it's rooted in early seasons. I don't know that it has been proven out in, like, the last year or so of Jet Lag the Game.
There's certainly been more positive moments, yeah. Okay, so we visit Pohang once again. We love Pohang.
Pohang. We have a little snack zone. We have some Pokemon bread.
We did discover, I think all of us became a fan of, or at least some of us became a fan of the Duncan Crook Messieurs that we discovered sort of late in the season.
Yeah, I wouldn't call myself a fan.
Oh my God, I got the most disgusting sandwich at that Dunkin'.
Yeah.
I got this like fried chicken sandwich and the chicken was actually quite good, but it was in this like cheese sauce that truly like, I couldn't eat it. Like I took a bite of it and I had to throw it away because it was one of the most horrible things I'd ever tasted.
I love the Dunkin' sandwiches.
So guys, if you are in the middle of nowhere in South Korea, do not go to a Dunkin' Donuts and try and order a sandwich.
I think you absolutely should. The Croque Messieurs were delightful.
The Croque Messieurs was fine.
You can't go wrong.
That little cafeteria had a Korean place. And I stood at the ordering thing for like 5 minutes waiting to order. Like I was going to get tteokbokki and they just didn't take my order. Like they just, no one ever was interested in taking my order. And by the time I realized it, it was like going to be too late for me to get my food. So I just gave up and went to the Dunkin'.
Then we ride the train. Very enjoyable.
Right. Well, we ride the train a lot. I mean, we sort of allude to this in the episode, but like, I mean, we are riding trains together for like 5 hours with nothing happening.
Yes.
It's longer than 5 hours.
I think it is longer.
Yeah.
And I think that like in episode, you know, we cut it very aggressively. So like, you know, I think from the audience perspective, it is hopefully, you know, perfectly enjoyable to watch and, you know, it's sort of funny that we don't get the right cards and we're sort of all hanging out. But like, from our perspective, it's like we're together for like 6 hours doing nothing because there's nothing we can do.
Well, it's always, I think, weird feeling when this sort of thing happens because it's like there are spans where like we go 2 hours without even filming anything.
No.
So it's like we're like fully like taking a nap, like scrolling Twitter, looking at Instagram, et cetera. It's like, oh, wait, yeah, we got to do the game thing now.
Yeah.
It's just like we get like so out of it.
Yeah.
It's especially weird when it's like we hadn't really had those moments previously in the season yet. Like it was pretty dense and just suddenly it was like, oh, not a whole lot going on.
Well, it was also weird because it's like we're towards the end of the game too. So I think like our brains are starting to get to the place of like, we're almost done. And then it's like, you're just hanging out and then you're like, oh, wait, no, we got to like re-engage, like get the cameras back on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was crazy.
Anyways, we stop in, where is it? It's near Donghae.
Oh, you know what? Actually, this is a classic layover behind the scenes thing.
Okay.
There's an entire storyline that we cut out here because it is irrelevant. It doesn't end up happening. But there's a whole thing that happens here that we cut out that's sort of interesting, which is that we end up playing this kind of game of chicken with, like, if someone's going to make a mistake and get off the train inefficient place that would allow somebody to get ahead of them. So, like, this train that we were on, I believe that it I want to get this right. I think we transfer at Donghae, and then you get on a train. The train that we got on at Donghae continued on to a station, I think, called Gangneung. And then from there, you would need to wait a while to transfer on a train to Yongsan. So what you needed to do was you needed to get on the train at Donghae and get off a stop before it ended to transfer to a different train. So it was like either way you needed to transfer to get to Yongsan. But if you waited until the train terminated, you had a less efficient transfer than the transfer earlier.
Yep.
And both teams realized this, and both teams were like, well, if the other person doesn't realize this, we'll get ahead of them. And so we separated on the train. And, or actually, did we even get off at Donghae? I think we didn't even get off. I think the train just continued up. And
yeah, it continued.
No, it continued all the way up to Gangneung.
Yeah, it continued up. And so, yeah, it was the case that you don't transfer Donghae. You just continue up on the train past Donghae. But the train terminates in Gangneung, but you shouldn't get off there. You should get off one stop early to make a transfer there because the transfer at Gangneung is less efficient. There was also, I think, a transfer at Donghae, which was an option as well. So I think there were actually three things that you could do wrong.
Yeah, because we thought the most intuitive thing was to transfer in Donghae because Donghae's the hub.
Yes.
And so you assume that that's the place that you transfer. But again, it's like most people would probably transfer there because that's like the bigger station, that's the hub, et cetera.
Right.
But in our case, considering that both the train we were on and the train that we were transferring to stopped at both Donghae and what was our
right. Oh, right. No, you're right. You're adding correct nuance to this. It was the case that the train you would transfer onto at Zhongdongjin was the same one that went through Donghae.
Yeah.
But if you continued on, you would be in front of them, right? That was the key.
Yes.
For a period.
We would as the chasers.
Right. And we could have gotten a block down.
Yeah.
So that was the other mistake. So there were two mistakes. One was you transfer at Donghae.
Yeah.
And one was that you stay on all the way until Gangneung. And we were hoping you would do one of the two. And you, Ben, were hoping we would do one of the two.
Yeah. I mean, it was just one of those things where I was like, since we were both sitting there for 4 hours, we had plenty of time to figure out what the most optimal moves were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, we could hope that the other team messed up, but that was not going to happen.
Yeah.
And there was also, I mean, there was the potential in Donghae of like, going another way, as I've said, like you could go from Donghae down the low speed lines instead of going to Yongsan. I had, again, calculated that I actually couldn't do that. And if that was an option for me, it would have been interesting because then there maybe could have been a situation where like I sneak away and like trick you guys into getting onto a train that I'm not on and I go a different way. But ultimately it was like, as long as you guys were going to Yongsan, I was going with you the whole way. There was that potential for you to get slightly in front, but it didn't work.
Okay, so of course, Ben doesn't mess up. We all have a nice little treat. The station was very nice. Nice beach view. Terrific weather when we were there. But
lovely little beach view.
Yeah.
We see the portal.
Yep.
Yeah, that was cool.
The train that goes out of the portal. And the pedal train.
Yeah, those were fun.
Which was co-rail. So that was legal. You could have taken that.
It was legal.
Yep. But then, of course, we all get on the train back towards Seoul. And Adam and I finally get there first. The other thing that happens is we finally all collectively forget about how we were trying to not show the cards this season to reveal that they're all handwritten.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, we all forget.
We've exposed ourselves.
Classic last episode shenanigans.
Right at the end.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yes. Look, we've exposed ourselves for being slightly incompetent in terms of our printing schedule.
We were busy.
We were.
For some reason. Oh, yeah, it was because actually we were about to go also film Scav, our upcoming Nebula Original series, like a couple of weeks after this. So we were sort of like slammed with both projects at once. That's why we were a little bit extra busy. Anyway, we finally get this and then we curse Ben and then Ben has to do the door thing. And we might get some questions on why Adam and I, we stay on the train and then get off the train.
Oh, yeah, whole other storyline that is cut out. This is a whole thing where it was potentially more efficient for us to stay on the train, connect in Seoul, and then go down, something Ben couldn't do, but that we could do. But then, for reasons I don't totally remember, we realized that actually it's going to be best for us to just make the transfer there.
Well, this was something you were looking into, and like
I was.
You just like changed your mind halfway through.
I did at the last second.
Yeah. I didn't really have the context, and I just trusted you. It's like, oh, we're off the train now.
I was like looking at this really quickly. I think that it was because like it turned out that the trains out of Seoul didn't stop in Yongsan or something. Mm. I don't totally remember what it was, but yeah, there was a whole thing where we had this whole plan to maybe do that if this backfired, but then it turned out not to be the thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, we just sort of cut that out. But yeah, we sort of awkwardly, we're on the train, then we get off the train and sort of like, why are they doing that?
Yeah. And then Ben gets the number wrong.
I do. And I feel kind of stupid because I was right. I say 2 minutes. I'm like, it's 2 minutes.
No, it is crazy that you're like, 2 minutes.
I don't know. Because it had been 2 minutes on these like much longer trains. And I was like, well, now we're in Seoul, so maybe it's more local. I don't know. I like overthought it. I should have just done 2 minutes.
But as we all know, this is a major station.
Like, yeah, I know. I should have just said 2 minutes, but I didn't.
Would have been a huge problem for us if you had.
Yeah.
I would have been probably a whole nother day of shenanigans.
Yeah. I think, I mean, if you had gotten that right, there is a very real chance you could have just straight up won.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
Of course, he didn't. So Adam and I, we rush over to Yongsan.
Yep. Put down our dokji. Is that how we say it? We say it wrong a lot, but I think it is dokji.
I think we say it incorrectly as jockey.
We call it jockey, but I think it's dokji.
Yes. Yeah, it's dokji.
Dokji. That doesn't make sense with the order of the letters.
Yeah. And I'd like to say, Sam, this is a quick, you're going to love this though.
Okay.
I would like to formally fill out my apology form to Sam Denby, because I thought that the shot you were setting up of us playing the dokji in the train station was too far away. I thought it was crazy far away and was going to look weird. But I actually think that shot looks really cool.
Cinema.
It does look cool. It does look cool. Sam went cinematographer mode, which is something that he does not often do.
No.
Well, we had time.
We did.
We were running a 3-camera setup.
It's true.
And the benefit of that long shot was that it caught the guy.
Yes.
Yelling at us to get off the platform.
Yes, it did.
Which was the second time this season we were yelled at to get off the platform.
Yeah.
They don't seem to like people hanging about on platforms.
Yes.
But yeah, it was, I mean, you saw the thing.
Stupid game is so hard.
It was hard.
What I'll say about dokji is what I learned in the practice, and I do think this helped me, was that you had to hit the thing incredibly hard. Like, I was having to throw those things as absolutely hard as I could in order to get them to flip over. And I only realized that with some practice. Like, my arm was sore for several days afterwards because I was truly, like, with maximum force slamming that thing down, I think was the only way you could make it happen.
Yeah, probably if this had not been like the last challenge, it was like, despite the hand-eye coordination side, I think what we learned is like, it was more so just strength.
You would have probably won it, yeah.
Probably should have had me do it, but I just thought that like, it would have been so wrong for the thing that would have sealed your victory to be down to me.
Yeah, I think you needed to do it.
Yeah, but yeah. That's the season.
Yep.
That's the season, folks. That's the season.
Congrats, Adam.
Well done.
Well, thank you so much. I am thrilled that I won every battle challenge.
Last anecdote. As often happens at the end of the season, the moments after the cameras stopped rolling, we were like, where do we go to dinner? And of course, it's always Adam's job to find us a nice place for dinner because Adam cares just a lot more than us about it. And he does find good spots. And this has happened multiple seasons in a row.
But we were tired. We were tired, and so I agreed to go to Shake Shack.
Well, it was like you found a good spot, but it was like, oh, this is 45 minutes away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was like,
nope.
And then in the rain,
yes,
in the darkness,
we saw
as darkness set in.
Yeah.
A beacon of hope emerged.
We saw the Shake Shack. Yes.
Shake Shack. Yeah, we went to Shake Shack again. Not as good as Japanese Shake Shack, regrettably.
No. We love Shake Shack.
We do.
We do love the food at Shake Shack.
Shake Shack, sponsor us.
Shake Shack, I think, has become in some ways kind of traditional. We've gotten Shake Shack at the end of multiple seasons now.
Yes. Well, yeah, it is often a thing of like, we want to sleep.
I love to sleep.
Anyway. Yeah. The really awesome thing that happened for me was that considering we ended up in Seoul, I was able to move my flight a day earlier, and I was on a plane like 12 hours after we wrapped. That was awesome.
Ben and I had a really cool day in Seoul, the day that we stayed in an awesome hotel and we went and ate at the restaurant that's in the Seoul Tower.
Yeah, that was cool. It was really fun.
Which rotates.
No, we didn't go to the one that rotates.
But one of them does rotate.
But Sam is referencing a time where I got gaslit when before we were filming our next season, Tag All Stars.
We can keep this as a future anecdote.
Okay, we'll keep this as a future anecdote. I was lied to and gaslit.
Gaslighting Adam is really fun.
It really is. Anyway, we'll be back probably for a mailbag episode soon. Yep. So there's probably more that we want to say about the season, but we are simply out of time for now. So think of your questions and watch like Reddit and stuff, and we'll post a thread to ask for questions soon. And thank you for watching this season.
Hey, thanks for watching this season.
And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.